Welcome to the AlphaVille Journal of Film and Screen Media podcast. Episode 8 for issue 24, Fostering Diversity on and Off Screen. This podcast is presented by the co-editors of this special issue, Dr. Kath Dooley, filmmaker, associate professor, and professorial lead at UNISA Creative, University of South Australia, Margaret McHugh, documentary filmmaker and lecturer in media arts and production at the University of Technology, Sydney, Australia, and Dr. Marsha Berry, associate professor in the School of Media and Communications, RMIT University, Melbourne, Australia. Thanks for tuning in.
So I'd like to start this podcast with an acknowledgement of the traditional custodians and their ancestors of the lands and waters across Australia, on whose unceded lands the Special Issue Committee live and work. So my name is Kath Dooley. I'm broadcasting to you from the lands of the Kaurna people of the Adelaide Plains, and I pay my respects to elders past, present and emerging.
And I'm Margaret McHugh, talking to you here today from the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. I would also like to pay my respects to the elders past and present, acknowledging them as the traditional custodians of knowledge of these lands.
And I'm Marsha Berry, talking to you from the unceded lands of the Boonwurrung language group of the Eastern Kulin Nations in Bayside, Melbourne. And I too would like to pay my respects to ancestors and elders past, present and emerging as custodians of knowledge.
Thanks, everyone. So we'd just like to start this podcast by talking about the inspiration for this special issue, which goes back to the 2017 Australian Screen Production Education and Research Association, or ASPRA for short, annual conference. This was held at the Victorian College of the Arts in Melbourne. And in the wake of the Me Too movement, panel discussions were held at this conference and then followed up again at the 2018 ASPRA conference at the Australian Film, Television, Radio School in Sydney. And in both of these sessions, we saw several concerns raised by instructors and industry practitioners regarding the seemingly gendered nature of some crew roles in tertiary screen productions. So faced with this significant anecdotal evidence of gender issues for students and noting the concern of educators, the ASPRA Research Subcommittee considered how we might gather some concrete data on diversity in screen education classrooms in Australia. So we wondered how we might help more broadly to create resources for educators and for the sector. So our first action was to commission a survey that investigated levels of diversity on the screen and behind the camera in Australian capstone or culminating tertiary screen productions. So basically, we were surveying the gender of students occupying different crew roles and the diversity of the characters that featured in these screen works produced by students. So the results of this survey were published in a report written by myself, Marsha and Margaret in 2020. And this report, which is titled Diversity On and Off Screen in Australian Film Schools, can be downloaded from the ASPRA website. And it's also featured on the Australian Policy Observatory website, where it was named as one of the top 10 downloaded resources associated with the culture theme in 2021. We're really proud of that. So you'll hear a bit more about this report later on in this podcast. Our second action was to organise this AlphaVille special issue that really digs into fostering diversity on and off screen in broader industry and education contexts. But really, we were also responding to a broader cultural zeitgeist, weren't we, Marsha?
Yeah, that's for sure. The Me Too movement and Black Lives Matter movements found profound resonance in Australia. And recently, the Roe versus Wade debate in the USA has further highlighted the need for vigilance about protecting hard-won rights for women to have abortions. There's also been a growing awareness or consciousness around the importance of recognising First Nations people, LGBTIQA plus issues, and more generally of diversity in terms of women and people of colour. We wanted to explore these further.
So Thanks, Marcia. Margaret, there's a number of key issues that this issue explores. Can you tell us a bit more about these?
Yeah, sure. First up, we've got two parts to this journal edition. The first section contains a collection of full-length articles that address diversity issues in the context of industry and practice. And then we have the second section is a dossier of shorter articles that explore how educators can foster diversity on and off screen in classroom teaching practices. The longer articles we've actually grouped into the following key themes, which emerged from the submissions. The first section is perception of diversity and slow to change, interrogating organizational strategies and initiatives. We also have the impact of caring responsibilities and unreasonable hours. We've looked at and we've had some articles exploring television cultures. And then in the final heading, we had addressing diversity on and off screen in the classroom. We also have a terrific interview included with UK-based Natalie Grant of Share My Telly Job about her lived experience of motherhood, working in television and the COVID-19 pandemic.
Thanks, Margaret. Yeah, I'll talk about that last one a bit more as we get through this podcast. But just before we do dig into articles more, I just wanted to note that we're all very conscious that in presenting this issue, we're building on substantial previous work that's been done in academic and industry contexts in recent years. And in our editorial, we note a number of key studies, although this isn't an exhaustive list. Margaret, we've also seen a number of key industry initiatives that have attempted to address diversity on and off screen in recent years, haven't we?
Yeah, we sure have. So government screen agencies around the world have increased efforts to address gender equality and diversity in the screen industry. Specific to gender, there's Australia's Screen Australia's Gender Matters Initiative, which was launched in 2015. And notably, the Swedish Film Institute's 50-50 by 2020, which was launched in 2012. There's also other industry actions that directly aim to address diversity behind and in front of the camera, including the British Film Institute's Three Ticks Diversity Fund, which was launched in 2015, and the upcoming Academy's Representation and Inclusion Standards for the 96 Oscars in 2024, where a film must meet two out of the four of the standards to be deemed eligible for inclusion in the Best Picture category. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens and how this starts to shape Academy and nominated films. Additionally, in more recent academic work, is starting to evaluate how these initiatives have actually performed over the years. So there's some interesting research coming out in that area as well.
Thanks, Margaret. Yeah, I'm really conscious that this special issue has been developed in a time of real flux as we've watched these initiatives unfold and started to consider the impacts.
Yeah.
So let's take a closer look at the articles that are featured in this issue. Firstly, I note two articles that present some really interesting data around practitioners' perception of diversity and change. And I think looking at this area is really important, noting all of these initiatives and things that have unfolded in recent times. So Susan Liddy presents an analysis of interviews with female-identifying practitioners in Ireland with some really interesting results. She suggests that these practitioners perceive there to be greater industry discourse around gender equality, diversity and inclusion, but less actual change on the ground. So she writes about notions of resistance and lip service as discussed by her interviewees. I found it really interesting to compare the perceptions of these practitioners with those of aspiring new entrants to the media industry in Ireland, which were explored in Sarah Arnold and Anne O'Brien's article. So Sarah and Anne have interviewed a number of Generation Z university graduates, finding them to have generally pretty cautious or sceptical attitudes towards the idea of equality and fairness in Irish media work. They suggest that this scepticism extends to these new entrants' expectations of discrimination and exclusion from the industry, which may actually deter some graduates from pursuing a career in the field. Both of these articles really made me reflect upon the pace of positive change regarding screen diversity in an Australian screen industry context. One notable report by local funding body Screen Australia, titled Seeing Ourselves, Reflections on Diversity in Australian TV Drama, probes statistics around cultural background, disability status and gender identity in 2016. And that report found a number of the country's minorities and marginalised communities are underrepresented in Australian television drama. So one might really question how things have changed in the last 6 years. On a related note, Natalie Krakauer's article explores how an advocacy and advisory organisation such as the GLAAD Media Institute. The GLAAD Media Institute is America's primary advocacy and advisory organisation for LGBTIQA plus representation in media and entertainment. So she looks at how could Australia have an organisation like this that could potentially positively impact on screen diversity in Australia. Marsha, what were some of your key takeaways from this article?
Krakauer's article, I think, is particularly interesting because she argues that positive cultural change can be achieved through the development of knowledge about the LGBTIQA community itself. She looks at how the GLAAD Media Institute's can be applied to the Australian context to improve diversity on the screen. Her central argument is that it's not enough to merely have people from LGBTIQI plus communities on the screen. It's also important to understand their community so that the stories have some level of, you know, authenticity or they're meaningful in some way, to move beyond stereotypes and cliched storylines. I think what is compelling is her focus on practical solutions and the importance of advocacy. And I really like the way she concludes her article, very powerful words. We need to be the change we want to see in the world now. So she sees that advocacy is completely intertwined with production processes.
Thanks, Margaret. Yeah, really. Thanks, Marsha, I should say. Very, very powerful. Moving on to a different area of exploration, perhaps not surprisingly, given the recent impacts of COVID, parenting responsibilities continue to be an issue hugely affecting levels of diversity behind the camera, which Susan Berridge explores in her article.
Yeah, Susan presents a fascinating snapshot of a current state of play in Scotland through a series of interviews with parents, including both women and men who've worked in film and television, to look at how gender equalities are also influenced by geography in terms of location as well as caring duties. I like her conception of the ideal media worker as a way of thinking about diversity and inequality. Her context is the UK film industry. She sets up the ideal media worker as someone who has geographic mobility, is autonomous, adaptable, and has a total commitment to work. In other words, working hours don't matter. This, of course, is at odds with material realities of parents and carers. Geography compounds this even further in the UK for those who live outside of London. Her interviews unpack these materialities in a really nuanced and meaningful way. Since she conducted her research, the landscape has changed substantially in the UK. Boris Johnson has left office along with the culture secretary who first proposed the privatisation of the BBC, and two new prime ministers have come in. Channel 4 is no longer going to be sold, so now the discussion is also around the funding structure of the BBC, which is also in flux. This change in funding may have implication for the channel's public service remit, but it's not clear what these will be as yet. So nevertheless, the wider issues that Berridge covers of inclusion, diversity and equity around gender, carer and geographic considerations continue to be very important in the screen industry in Scotland and other parts of the UK. And Berridge's article provides a really nuanced engagement with these. And I think this is where the value of her work lies.
Thanks, Marcia. Agreed. So some of these issues are also taken up by Helen Kennedy and Jack Neusinger in their interview with the aforementioned UK-based freelance series producer Natalie Grant, who's co-director of ShareMyTelejob.com. So this is an organisation that promotes job sharing and encourages the normalisation of flexible working hours or flexible working approaches in the UK television and film industry, and more broadly, which is hugely helpful for working parents. And I really appreciated the fine-grained detail that Grant is able to go into in this interview. So she paints a very clear picture of the struggles that parents face, and in particular, those faced by single mothers, people without family support, and people attempting to work outside of those central production hubs such as London. So just changing focus a bit, let's have a look now at two articles that explore the effects of television cultures on diversity. I was troubled but not surprised by the findings of Nobes and Kerrigan's study of First Nations content on Australian television screens.
Kath, this one, so this was an article by, as you've said, Karen Nobes and Susan Kerrigan, called White Noise, Researching the Absence of First Nations Presence in Commercial Australian Television Drama. The article explored the systemic processes that contributed to the disparity of First Nations content on Australian commercial and non-commercial television networks. Interestingly and importantly, an enduring theme that emerged from the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander research participants was the lack of opportunity in these commercial spaces. So what the research uncovered was that scripted drama with First Nations content is visible in non-commercial spaces, which is protected by the Australian content regulations. So this would include like the Australian Broadcaster and the SBS charters, SBS, which also includes the National Indigenous Television Channel. Yet First Nations content is notably absent from the commercial Australian television dramas. So, you know, this was a relatively significant finding in the sense that we're not seeing First Nation content in our kind of our more kind of commercial channels and networks.
Thanks, Margaret. Marcia, do any of these issues that Nobes and Kerrigan explore resonate with Lucy Brown et al.'s study of UK television cultures?
Yes, I think they do. Brown et al. Approach diversity within television cultures through notions of power and agency. And I think this is a really good lens to look at this whole issue through. They argue that unconscious bias needs to be addressed within concept and idea development in film and television, and that this in turn is an important step towards addressing structural inequality in terms of power and agency. They set up a dialectic or a sort of dichotomy between an industry that's very risk averse, yet there's a need for greater diversity and inclusivity. So on one hand, you've got an industry that doesn't want to take a risk. On the other hand, you've got a bubbling up of community pressures for the need for greater diversity and inclusivity. The article has a really deep engagement with theory and literature and presents excellent interview material in the form of a really robust case study looking at power and agency. They argue that the way new recruits are inducted into the television industry through talent schemes needs to be addressed, but that a focus on diversity in recruitment is not enough. They stress that unconscious bias first needs to be seen in relation to historical, structural, gender, and racial inequalities, or it risks pushing the responsibility of these processes onto the individual as a solution, while overlooking the sort of normative or order within the media industry. You know, this is the way things are, this is the way things have always been, type mentality. They propose that inclusivity development framework to challenge this mentality through five aspects. Induction, where their first aspect is there needs to be induction, where an ethic of care moves beyond tokenism with everybody doing the work. Disruption, where suspicion can challenge norms. Explicit, where implicit, where the implicit is made explicit, in other words, calling things out, stating things are the way they are, being direct rather than indirect, so explicit rather than implicit, and active, where cultural shifts are dynamic and ongoing. And finally, the importance of making time and space for diverse experiences. As in, it might take longer, but the time needs to be spent. The framework highlights skill development for screen professionals in two key areas: active listening and explicitly recording how ideas are being developed. And I think these can potentially inform screen education.
Thanks, Marcia. Yes, I think that this article's exploration of individual agency and unconscious bias is really important. So moving on, there's just one last full-length article to note, which shifts the focus of this special issue from industry to the education sphere. So this is an article that we co-authored with colleagues Craig Batty and James Verdun, which seeks to further analyse the aforementioned ASPRA report, which provides data on gender diversity behind the camera in Australian film schools, and to cross-reference this with other research in the area. I think that this ASPRA report has a lot of intelligence to offer educators in terms of the gendered nature of student film crews in Australian higher education settings.
Some of the significant findings from this survey include what was broadly observed from the report, as you've mentioned, Kath, was that crew roles in film schools are gendered, and that diversity on screen and capstone projects is limited. And the report also provides evidence that challenges a widely held assumption that gender equity is an issue only encountered when film students graduate into the film industry. And this assumption is kind of based on the fact that there's, in the Australian context, like an even number of male and female students graduating from screen production units at university. However, what this report demonstrates is that diversity on and off screen is not just an industry issue, but it's also something that's encountered even before they reach the industry workforce, in that crew roles in student capstone projects are already gendered. So a key finding, an example of this, is that of the 182 projects surveyed, only 16% were non-European Anglo-Celtic lead characters. So that's a relatively significant finding in the sense of, you know, what are the lead characters, protagonist stories that we're actually kind of producing in the film school contexts. The report concludes that issues of diversity and gender need to be explicitly addressed in the curriculum design and the teaching practices before students encounter the industry if real change is going to be achieved.
Thank you, Margaret. Yes, I recall being, again, not surprised by some of the findings in that report, for example, cinematography, that the majority of students undertaking that role were male or male identifying. So, yeah, there's a lot of work to be done there. So our discussion of the data of that ASPA report culminates in a number of recommendations to foster gender diversity within student film crews, within crew roles, really building upon suggestions made by educators interviewed for the ASPRA study. One of these suggestions relates to the use of diverse texts in the classroom, an issue that's also taken up by Aparna Sharma in one of the several short articles featured in the dossier addressing diversity on and off screen in the classroom. So Sharma usefully shares approaches used to critically engage students with diversity in documentary media education. She argues for the inclusion and curation of diverse materials in the curriculum. Sharma also presents techniques to have students consider their subject positions and reactions to documentary works. Margaret, there seems to be some crossover here with Sarah Sinwell's work on teaching diversity and questioning representation.
Yes, there is. So Sinwell looks at how students can be encouraged to actually interrogate diversity and representation in their filmmaking practices through teaching strategies. So Sinwell in her article has sort of argues for students to engage in like with the following six modes of analysis when creating work. So the first one is a search for presence. The second one seeks out positive representation. The third strategy would be to create complex and layered characters. The fourth considers casting, crew, consulting and mentoring, which includes below the line, so not just above the line crew roles. And the fifth one focuses on intersectionality, empathy and empowerment. And the sixth interrogates your choices. So that they were some of the kind of the key strategies that Sinwell has kind of spoken about and developed in that article as kind of direct ways to kind of intervene and intercept students in their kind of their filmmaking practices. And then exploring like another approach to student practice is Vincent Garioso's Reimagining Multiculturalism and Diversity Through Screenwriting and Filmmaking, which looks at the pedagogic methods used in the research project called Zooming In Multiculturalism Through the Lens of the Next Generation. And what I found particularly interesting in this article was the way that Garioso explores the interconnections between multiculturalism and diversity through filmmaking and sociology, through the students' approaches to writing, the actual writing process for the screen.
Thanks, Margaret. Yes, very interesting. Shifting focus somewhat, Duckett and Walsh's article, Left to My Own Devices, I Probably Could, Reflections on Inclusive Pedagogy and Gender Equity During Melbourne's Pandemic Lockdown, offers us a different lens through which to consider the impacts of COVID-19 on screen diversity.
Yeah, look, what I thought was exciting about this article in particular was the way they drew on and explored feminist kind of practices and theory in the kind of like a pedagogical practice, with their teaching online. And what they argued for was that the home, so obviously everyone's in lockdown, we're teaching online, so they argued for the home to be seen as a site for creative play. And they elaborate on that, saying like, as educators during the COVID-19 pandemic, that they reflect on how smartphone filmmaking in the home during these lockdowns could in fact become sites for feminist pedagogy and processes in the students' filmmaking practices.
Mm. Yeah, so I think this one offers some really interesting analysis of positive outcomes from the COVID-19 pandemic. So overall, I think that these dossier pieces create some really valuable guidelines and suggestions for educators wanting to foster diversity in their classrooms. And it's been really rewarding to work with authors on bringing these to attention in this issue. So reflecting more on the industry-focused articles, what are your main takeaways, Marcia?
I think from an industry perspective, we can see that there's change, but that it's very slow. In summary, I think from the articles, there's still quite a way to go in terms of structural inequalities of power and agency, as well as geography, and that these are geography in terms of the film industry being concentrated in particular centres within the UK or within Australia, and that these are connected to broader conversations and debates around gender, race and class, both within the industry and outside of the industry. Normative, particularly heteronormative orders and structures, need to be explicitly challenged, especially given the risk averse pressures within the industry itself. So I think, you know, there's an interesting relationship here that is also an interesting direction for future and further research.
Thanks, Marcia. I agree. And yeah, it certainly seems there's a long way to go, and that's why academic work is so important in this area. So it's really been a pleasure to explore this further through this special issue. Before we wrap up, I'd just like to thank Alphaville's general editors for their support in bringing this special issue to fruition, as well as all of the peer reviewers who gave up their time to provide feedback on the articles. We really appreciate that. So thanks for listening, and please enjoy reading the issue.
You've been listening to a conversation between the co-editors of issue 24 of Alphaville Journal of Film and Screen Media, Dr. Kath Dooley, Margaret McHugh, and Dr. Marcia Berry. This podcast is produced with each new issue of the Alphaville Journal of Film and Screen Media. Alphaville is a fully peer-reviewed, open-access online journal edited and published by staff, PhD, and postdoctoral researchers in film and screen media at University College Cork, Ireland. This podcast, along with every back issue of Alphaville, can be found at alphavillejournal.com. Thank you to all our contributors, and thank you for listening.